handle the truth.
Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covan. It is 5:18 p.m. on September 14th in the year of our Lord, 2020. Quick break. I'm doing Making Podcasts Great Again tonight at 8, so I got about an hour and a half left of work, you know, the work that gives me benefits and doesn't make me go insane. So I figured let me take a little early evening break and do some Righteous Prick podcasting. Thank you for those who wrote, condolences for last week's episode. Appreciate it. Wrote a great eulogy for my uncle, which was then not allowed because the Catholic Church is, and I say this as a Catholic, not as some bitter comedian. Very big on rules. And when my father passed away 3 years ago, me and my brother both got to read eulogies during the mass. Well, now they're sometimes very sticklers for procedure. So I was supposed to read a eulogy after for the attendees. And then the priest just wrapped up the mass and said, oh, I thought you did that before. And so instead I just read it to my uncle's girlfriend, my mom, my uncle's sister, and my girlfriend at our after funeral mass lunch. So it was very good, but not the audience. Much like my comedy, the eulogy was impeccable, struck all the right notes, and nobody heard it. So so that's that. It's not that. But yes, it's been, not the most pleasant. But it's you try to put it in perspective. There have been hundreds of thousands of people who've endured pain and suffering, both themselves and their families during this time. My uncle's death was not COVID related, and it was sort of surprising in terms of the, not to use a phrase that Trump uses, but in this case, it was in fact the cure was worse than the disease in terms of. Chemo really took him out. He was on a timetable, but his system was already, I think, compromised enough that the chemo itself sort of destroyed his system. So that's the end of that chapter as far as the podcast goes. Let's talk about happier things. Just jotted down a list of things to discuss before letting you go on with your week. Obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, I trust that you've listened to some of my stand-up. I'll just do the pitches up front. But please, I keep trying to push the stand-up comedy, not because it's, it's not the chef's special that I'm trying to push, where it's like, well, we have these leftover ingredients and we made a shepherd's pie, so put it on an insert and try to sell as many as you can. The bread and butter is the stand-up comedy, the steak, the dessert. It's the stand-up comedy. So please, if you're listening to this, you're probably tired of these messages and maybe you already have, but if you haven't, give the stand-up comedy a try. You know, listen to stream some of the albums, but then, you know, buy some. I never stop getting annoyed by people who say, can I donate? And I go, I'm not a fucking charity. I have two jobs, a good amount of money in the bank, and talent. So no, you can't donate. Because I'm not a fucking charity. I am a comedian. And if you want to give me money, there are many albums for sale that you can purchase. So that's the way to do it. You know, so stream, I get it. Money could be tight for people, but stream. But any fan of mine, I mean this in all sincerity, any fan of mine, I have every Guns N' Roses album, even the Spaghetti Incident, okay, folks? Because I'm a fan. So anybody that's a fan of my humor should probably have all six of my stand-up albums and both Trump albums. Now, I have listened to the first Trump album recently, and that was done. It was still well-regarded, but my impression has gotten so much better. The production quality that Aaron put into the second album versus what he put into the first album was night and day. Not a critique of the first album, just saying we both were at the top of our game for Fireside Craps the Deuce. So if you are a J.L. Covan fan, okay, indeed, not just in word, all six of those stand-up albums and Fireside Craps the Deuce should be yours. And then, most likely, your OCD will kick in and say, well, I got to get Fireside Craps, the first one, just to complete the collection. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with you completing the collection. But let's move some units this week. It's not the money. It's just I want my stand-up in as many earbuds as possible, plain and simple. I've said it repeatedly. I hate what the Trump era comedy has become. Why don't we just get into this? One of the bullet points I had to talk about was jokes. I genuinely have deep contempt for probably a majority of the people following me. Because if there was a way to do this politely, what I'd really like to say on social media is, hey, if you are somebody, like if somebody tweets, God, I need the next so-and-so video. Like if they need a lip sync video, you know, if their comedic hunger is for things that Trump has already said, lip synced by somebody whose management team has probably already told her to move on from that as they try to make her a brand and a talk show host. That's just my guess. Then don't at me on those threads, because the person who is craving to rehear Trump's voice from a lip sync video is not going to be a comedy fan of mine. They might like what I do as far as Trump, but they're not real comedy fans. So you don't have to at them. You don't have to say, have you heard of JL? You should check his stuff. They don't need to know. They don't need to know. Like I want smart references to my comedy. I want people like, and if it's a telltale sign that somebody's not going to be a fan of mine, if they go, what about JL? If you like lip sync, you might also like this original voice. Just totally unnecessary. But I am starting to realize that I'm starting to despair. I think that's the only way I can put it. And I don't mean that in like a mental health cry for help kind of way. But whenever I write a joke, okay, I believe last week I already discussed the veterinarian joke. I'm looking this up. I apologize. I'm so well prepared. But I'm looking up the vet joke that I did because it really annoyed me how people reacted. Sorry. Hold on for one second. Doom, 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 doom. Heroes. I'm searching it because I want to know. You might already be yelling at your phone saying, you discussed it last week. Move on, fella. But you know what? I would like to see it. Okay, so 4 days ago. Okay, so that was 4 days ago. I think. Nope. Hold on. I've also been having fun blocking people because now there are people who will say things like, how can you block... how can you do that? September 7th. So 7th, 14th. Did I discuss this? I think I probably discussed. Anyway, that was a long way of doing nothing. But I'm tired of, like, people who don't like comedy are the most vocal people instructing others on what comedy is. So I got into some things over a joke I made about veterinarians calling themselves heroes during COVID. And, you know, people like to ignore context when jokes come up. They like to make them personal. Like shitty comedy fans like to make jokes about them when they're not. Like, it's sort of a weird narcissistic, pathetic thing that some people do, where it's like, well, my vet saved my dog from illness, so he's a hero to me. And my answer to that is, I don't care. Like, that's irrelevant. The joke is about a vet putting up a sign on their animal hospital during COVID. The sign has not been there for the year. It went up sometime during COVID, when doctors who were dying and nurses who were dying because they were catching COVID from patients and they were constantly exposed to the highest level of danger, were basically going, those first responders are heroes. My vet has you leave your pet at the door so there's no human-to-human contact to get a dog treated. Now, are they providing a needed service? Of course. Are they probably good people? Yes, even though one vet at my animal hospital is a full-fledged cunt. But I didn't bring that up. We didn't need to get into specifics. Although, to me, it's always like, well, if you're ruining jokes, then why don't we get all the facts then? But the point being, context matters. Like, I'm not saying vets are pieces of shit. I'm saying a vet who puts up a sign during COVID saying heroes work here is pretty absurd. And I was making a joke also. It wasn't a serious talking point. Although, yes, every joke has some seriousness to it. But it was just a joke. And the amount of people that just responded with vitriol, it was just like, go away. You people were never... Sorry to burst the bubble, but Twitter is transactional. Like, I provide free comedy content so that maybe some of you will become comedy fans of mine. This isn't for deep forming friendships or an equal exchange of ideas. I try to exchange and interact with as many people as I can, which is part of why I get so angry. But it's so disheartening when you just realize, I must have talked about this last week, but I love the people who say, take the L, bro. And it's like, I don't know if this has 400 likes and 30 retweets and 9 people angrily commenting. So you take the L, you fucking loser. But I have a dog. But as I say, I'm not an idiot. So that's where those collide sometimes. My dog is generally sweet, but sort of makes my life miserable at the same time. I realized... You know, I'm going to have this dog. I've had the dog for almost 5 years. I'll probably have the dog for another, who knows, 5 to 10. And, not the ideal dog. The dog is terrified. We move somewhere quieter and somehow she got more scared. She pukes often when my girlfriend leaves her. Not when I leave her, which is insulting. I'm not puke worthy. But overall, I like having the dog. Cookie's a sweet dog. She's more of a pain in the ass than the average dog. DMX Rottweilers excluded. But I'm not a crazy pet person. And I like dogs, but I'm able to be very, sane about them. Like this guy on the subway brought his dog on. I almost said something and I said, mind your own business. But this guy comes on with his girlfriend or friend. I couldn't tell if the guy was gay or just extremely effeminate. And he could have been both. He could have been one or the other, but he was definitely effeminate. And that's probably problematic, right? The fact that I just said that. I'm starting to, I don't want to say get triggered, but I'm starting to realize, when you post a joke, someone out there will take it the wrong way, often intellectually dishonestly. And anyway, guy gets on the train with his fucking dog. No bag, no container for it. Just walks on the train like the dog is just another customer. And the dog's sniffing around and sort of like, you know, reaching out. And this pretty young woman says, oh, hey, and like pets the dog. The dog was already kind of investigating. It wasn't like she jumped out of her seat to go get the dog. And the guy goes, could you please ask if you can pet my dog? And she said, oh, no, oh, I'm sorry. Yes, is it a service animal? And the guy went, no. Like, that was the extra layer on top of it, the condescending snootiness. And then the woman just kind of minded her own business from then. But the dog just, smelled around. And I really wanted to say something. I would be like, dude, if you're violating the fucking rules of the subway, you sad sack of shit, then don't play the let's obey the ethics of dog interaction game. It's like you're already fucking dead to rights wrong. So like if this nice, she was very nice about it, but it's not like she went after the dog. The dog was already like sniffing around. And I was like, God, don't, I reached that point, I guess. And maybe that's the danger. I reached that point where I was just like, it's time to give up. Don't interact. Don't intercede. You don't have to go Larry David on people. Just let them be pieces of shit. And that's that. And then when I was leaving my uncle's, when I was getting off the train after my uncle's funeral, like going back home to Jersey, a guy got on with the dog once again, not in a carrying case, and just sat his dog on the seat next to him. We're talking like a 50 pound dog, not like some little tiny thing. And it is, I don't know. I think we're fucking done. I do. And I don't mean that in, I don't want to say that in the sort of cynical failed comedian, you know, the most common path, it seems, for failed, I'm only half white, but I've been bitter my entire career. That's the consistency. But I do enjoy seeing the trajectory of so many white male comedians who've had some success, but they hit 40 and it hasn't popped off fully for them. And then they just become the most angry, bitter, quote unquote, truth-telling guys who become cynical about everything. But like they pose that as some sort of intellectual integrity and strength, when it's really just that they're sort of bitter and annoyed that their careers didn't quite hit where they thought they would. Now, you guys have gotten to witness that process with me over 6 months, but like I said, I'm only half white. But I've also, for people who've been following me for years, I've been an outspoken, bitter comedian for a decade. 'Cause there's a lot of things wrong with comedy, not just what we choose to say is funny, but also the business of it and the pay that comedians get. So anyway, I've at least, I feel like I have a track record of intellectual consistency on this. But that said, when I see things like that on the subways, it makes me despair a little bit more each day. But jokes, let's get back to jokes. So today I posted on Twitter, I was listening to Joe Biden give a climate change speech, and I heard things. I remember going to a Jay Inslee fundraiser, and I think I was one of the only people in the room who'd read his climate plan. I think most of the people were just like, let's see Jay Inslee. Let's get to know him. But I was actually deeply dedicated to his candidacy. So I had read his climate plan. It was a very dry and dense 20 plus pages of, full sheets of printer paper. And I could hear basically direct quotes from Joe Biden today. I'm okay with that. That's what you do. Take the best ideas like that. Like, so I said on Twitter, bittersweet to hear Joe, having actually read Jay Inslee's climate plan, it was bittersweet to hear Joe Biden, clearly quoting from it numerous times during his climate speech. Hashtag Biden Harris 2020. So I figure hashtag Biden Harris 2020 shows that I'm not some sort of bitter, you should have done this and now I'm voting third party or I'm not voting. Like, putting hashtag Biden Harris and bittersweet. Of course, bittersweet also is a word that has meaning. And the clear meaning there would be bittersweet, meaning like, hey, I'm happy to see Joe Biden adopting this policy, but Inslee was my guy, so it's always bittersweet to know that these policies, but not the, not the candidate, but the policies will sort of live on in federal government, hopefully. Pretty clear tweet. Immediately. I guess this is just the internet now. Immediately. I think because when I was able to curate more, who followed me. You didn't get just random masses of doofuses following you. But oh my God, who cares where the plan came from? Like a lot of responses like that. And it's like some woman wrote, two people can't share the same idea. And I just thought to myself, that's it. That's it. It's over. It's over. You can't. And these are not people who are like, you have to understand, I am always ready for social media verbal combat. So that's not, these aren't people who are haters. I'm going to say something very profound right now. Not really, but an analogy to stand-up comedy. The worst hecklers in the world aren't the guys or gals who get up and go, you're not funny, fuck you. Because then you can go, shut your fucking mouth, you dumb bitch, and then ask security to make them leave. No, the worst hecklers are the people who like you and never shut up. You say a joke, and that's why my dog is a fucking asshole. He said this dog was a fucking asshole. You're the man. You're the fucking man. You're like, okay, guy, stop going, De Niro and Cape Fear on me, just laughing over the jokes and like ruining, like, because you can't reprimand people like that as hard because they're nominally on your side, but they're still fucking up your vibe and fucking up your show. And that's how I feel about so many people who must be following me on Twitter. It's like, I am much more at ease with people going, Trump's going to win again and you're going to be fucking crying liberal tears, bro. You mad, bro? You're not funny, man. Those are easy. Those are easy to just fucking hammer away at. It's the people who seem to be fans, but also have horrific reading comprehension that make your life miserable because you're like, I am now unable to do what I want to do, which is tell you you're a fucking idiot and you're annoying me because you're a fan and you've got to be nice to the fans. But I'm just sitting there going, yeah, ma'am, I didn't say two people couldn't have the same idea. Do you know what bittersweet means? Did you read the whole tweet? I know it was 172 characters, which is a fucking, Shakespearean play, but maybe just read the whole thing and realize that I'm clearly a fan of Biden and just commenting on the fact that the candidate I supported is echoing through this campaign, which of course I find to be a good thing, hence bittersweet. I didn't say bitter and miserable, which you're making me. And all this, as I keep saying, is all in pursuit of a career that if I had to place money, if anybody out there, if there is a comedian stock market and you can short me, do it. I don't think it's going to happen. I'm pretty sure this is all, I've peaked. If you wanted to sell JL stock somewhere around late July, that's where we peaked. That's when I got got a manager and a publicist and put together, what feels like the most ineffective team in the history of entertainment. It's always weird when you get direct messages from major newspapers and television shows because they see you on Twitter and then nobody's contacting you because of your manager or publicist. That's always weird. Because then you go, hey, wait a second. But the point is, regardless of that, the point is, guys, it feels like the JL stock has peaked. Now, that's the stock as far as having a career. Comedically, I can tell you that in 2021, I will drop either a new album or waste a lot of money filming a special. For me, it feels like I should just do another album. Why if it's always broken, why fix it is my comedy motto. I have an hour ready to go and it's fucking killer. I don't call my shot often. I will say things like I have another album ready, but Thoughts and Prayers, which a lot of people enjoy, was probably the only album where I said, like, I was calling my shot and I was like, this album is the fucking shit. If I can stick the landing on this, it's the shit. And I was right. And then Keep My Enemies Closer, I don't know if I thought from the jump that it was going to be as great as it was, but I knew I had a lot of great bits. That fucking album. Whew. Bury me with a copy of Keep My Enemies Closer. That's, how about that? That's morbid, but also true. Because that, Thoughts and Prayers, love that album. Love all my albums, but Keep My Enemies Closer, I feel like, is the most, it's, I don't know. That's that 2012 LeBron season, you know, where there might have been PEDs, but it was just 285-pound LeBron just barreling through the entire league towards his first championship. But I have an hour that is like that. That I know. I think it could be more impactful than any of the other albums, not just because I have a larger fan base. But then I look at it and say, yeah, but you know what? I think I sold like 500 copies of Fireside Craps the Deuce. And that was exactly what people wanted. They were like, this guy is the greatest Trump impersonator. I'm such a huge fan. He has a Trump album that just came out. I'll get it. So of my 142,000 followers on Twitter, my 7,000 followers on Instagram, we're still trying to build that up. Like, I think less than, I'm pretty sure less than 1%. Let's say we double it, okay? Let's say 500 bought it, and let's say, you know what? Fuck it. Let's say 1,000 people streamed it. That means 1% of my fans have bought the thing that they are biggest fans of that I produce. How would that not make you feel like your comedy career is completely doomed? If people in general are just so tight, like, this isn't saying tight fist, you're under no obligation to buy. I'm not even talking to individually. This is just in the aggregate. How could you not lose faith? Like, I am bigger than I've ever been before. And this is exactly why I'm getting famous, is this exact product. And then I sell that product and it sells more than any album I've ever put out, but it still didn't fucking rock the world or change my life. So when I think of putting out a new album, I go, well, it's just a at this point, it's just a historical record of what a good comedian I was. And this fucking album, this album, whenever I can make it, is going to be fucking superb. And I'm calling, like, this is, I am calling my shot on this one for sure. Like, I'm just certain of it. I've done enough. This would be my 7th stand-up album. I know a good album from a really good album from a classic. This is a motherfucking classic that I have chambered and ready to go. What I need is 2 to 3 months of gigs to really work it out. And, you know, hopefully instead of having to do one take JL, like I've had to do my whole career, it'd be great to do 3 or 4 headlining shows and then be able to like do what everybody else gets to do, which is like edit together a phenomenal album instead of just having to be like, okay, we got 90 minutes of material, one show. First off, let's pray people show up. And second, I mean, Keep My Enemies Closer was in front of 25 people in a tiny club. And maybe that's why I'm so proud of that album, because that was all me. Like, that wasn't even momentum or I was feeling the crowd. That was literally just like, nope, I'm going to have to generate the fucking heat on this one. And I fucking did. So I don't know why I'm saying all this, but I'm in great despair for the future of stand-up comedy. Not for famous people, but for just people appreciating the art. It's like we're already heading down that jazz path where only, you know, cool hipsters will like it at some point. Because everybody's a comedian now. I can't get into all the TikTok shit and all that, but it's just, man, it is, there's no other word for it but despair, you know? And then to have fans that annoy you, you know, I have sold, let me put it to you this way, folks. I have sold fewer, this is not to say I haven't sold some albums, but I've sold fewer stand-up albums in the last 6 months, okay? I don't know how many, more than usual, clearly, but I have sold fewer stand-up albums than I have received emails and direct messages with sketches and songs written out by fans and telling me, you can use this, just give me credit, blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, what the fuck are we doing? I can't. So my fan, and that's, I think I talked about this last week, but that's what annoys me, is like, there's people enjoy what I do, but many people don't respect what I do. And if people don't respect what you do, then you can't put your faith in it. And that's the problem. It's very frustrating because I feel like I'm ready to get to a new peak in terms of my skills. And, you know, it's almost like I can't trust most of my audience. That's a weird thing to say, but it feels like I can't trust most of my audience. Like, of all the comedians that have blown up specifically during COVID, I'm thinking there are three others and myself. Within a week or two, will have the smallest following of the four, even though I was the first to blow up, the first to go viral, and the overwhelming champ in terms of quality of and diversity of content. You know, you're talking about a stand-up comic with 6 albums, God knows how many fucking YouTube videos and sketches written, all predating COVID. And then I was the first to blow up of the group of people who've sort of gotten big during COVID. And I really blew up. I didn't blow up like a couple people have heard. I mean, you know, I went viral and I had a lot of shit written about me and did some podcasts. And now after 6 months, I'm still churning out good shit. I'm ready to drop another stand-up album. I got no manager, no agent, and I'm the least followed of the people who've blown up in these 6 month period after being the first out of the gate with the hot shit. And, you know, it is what it is, but it's very distressing because even in this state, and anybody who's been listening to this podcast the whole year in this new iteration of The Righteous Prick, knows that this was a fear I had. Like I was always cautious, so that maybe that helped me. But if I'm being honest, I was not wanting to be cautious. I was wanting to jump this opportunity and hope against hope that my career might change. So instead what I've been is overworked because I've been doing tons of comedy stuff, but also doing my full-time job because the full-time job, I learned this the hard way 12 years ago or 11 years ago, that 11 years ago, I can't trust comedy to come through. And my caution has been validated, but it's just every day there's a new thing. It's like, okay, so now I'm like, I don't know. It's just very frustrating because, as my friend John Moses said to me in a text today, he says, "You can't even get a big break during your big break," which is, I think, pretty much sums it up, don't you think? Yeah, I mean, the manager that I let go, who didn't get me anything in 2.5 months, he was the only manager who approached me. But one of the things that really frustrates me is he had said he had pursued sketch shows and whatever. Now, I know I was once submitted to SNL. Nothing came of it. But you had to do like a release. You have to sign a release and do all that shit. I never had to sign a release. So this guy never got me even to the introductory phase where I could be rejected. So, you know, I deeply resent that, of course. But what's even worse is that I had a comedian reach out to me probably a month and a half ago and said, "Hey, dude, do you have somebody submitting you for SNL? And I said, "Oh, yeah, well, I just picked up some guy. So he knows that, like, I'm about that. I'd like that to be something that he does for me. We've made it very clear." He goes, "Okay, man," because I was going to say, I could get my manager to submit you with, I'm being submitted, and I could get my manager to do the same for you. And I was like, oh, that's so nice. And that, hey, how about that? What a nice fucking gesture. And I said, no, that's okay. But thank you. Of course, thank you. Because I thought, oh, well, you know, I'm now working with somebody, so they should do that. Well, they never did that. They didn't do shit. You know, but it's one of those things. How can I be at fault? I had one manager express interest, which still to this day is shocking. But I don't know. I don't know if people are looking for something and they see me and they think diversity and they look at me and think big white guy and don't listen to the material. Don't listen to the story. Don't find out anything about me. I don't understand this business or why after all this, I am still, and my girlfriend always tells me, she's like, oh, well, don't put out this negative stuff. This podcast is the only fucking outlet I have. And it's got, you know, like 800 listeners. Okay. Cause I'm not doing a funny voice. So this should be a quote unquote safe space for me to talk. So if it sounds like complaining, it is, but I've started to feel like Daniel Plainview and There Will Be Blood, you know, just, I don't like most people. When I look at them, I don't see, you know, much worth liking. I didn't think this was going to get that dark, but it's just, I don't know. I don't know what happens next. Obviously COVID is rough, but it ain't been rough for everybody. It's not like other people aren't still thriving and whatever, but in the entertainment business who've blown up, but I don't get it at this point. I think it ain't supposed to be, you know, and I don't say that with pity. I say that with, like, you know, I'm 41. I was going to quit comedy, a year ago. I moved to Jersey just a few weeks shy of a year. I'm in Jersey now. And that was its own statement. That was I like doing funny shit, but, you know, it ain't working, I don't think. But even bad luck like that, I remember working in a club in Long Island, and they're like, well, the owner would like to see you before you leave, you know. And I was like, well, I do have to catch two fucking trains just to get home before 2:30 in the morning. And I did my second set. And they were like, well, we'll tell them you were sick. And I go, really? You can't, this is an insult that I want to get home before 3 a.m. that I have a two hour and 25 minute fucking public transit commute at midnight on a Saturday. This is an insult. And I think that's just my luck with comedy. You know, it's not meant to be. I'm not meant to blow up. I've probably wasted many years of my life pursuing it. You know, it's made me unhappy. It's strained relationships. It's disappointed my family, and it's, the unhealthy lifestyle of it has probably ticked off years of my life. So other than that though, it's been a total joy and the journey of a lifetime. Speaking of jokes, I wrote one and I'm glad nobody has criticized it. I was happy. I wrote one today where I said, Andrew Gillum, who ran for governor in Florida. He was the mayor of Tallahassee. He was, you know, he didn't win. He lost to Ron DeSantis, asterisk. But he was found, last year. I think it was last year or maybe early this year. You know, in a hotel, there was an OD. He was with a male escort and somebody OD'd on crystal meth. And he came out yesterday or today as bisexual. And immediately people are like, oh, that's his truth. That's his beautiful truth. And it's bold and brave. And I go, it is. But it's a weird thing. I kind of want to do a sketch on this, where when it comes to certain things, like I remember Governor McGreevy of New Jersey, this is many, many years ago, but Jim McGreevy, he was under, investigation for like serious fucking corruption in New Jersey. And he called a press conference and his fucking wife was sitting there and I hope he told her ahead of time. I think he did, but he came out as a gay American, he announced that he was gay. And I remember just going, can you just do that? Can you be under investigation for corruption and then go, I have something to say that will totally fuck up your attempt to investigate me. I am living my truth as a gay American. And I think he called himself a gay American. And I remember just laughing, being like, wow. And then that became the story. And I think it was true. But man, I guess that's the nuclear option. It's like, you're going to jail, dude, unless you pull something out of your ass, literally. And and he said, I'm a gay American with his wife sitting there. And I was like, holy shit. And that was just it. It was like, okay. So he resigned, I think, and was like, I'm resigning because I'm a gay American, not because I'm the most corrupt motherfucker in this corrupt state. And I thought of Andrew Gillum, where I was like, this dude has kids and a wife. And obviously that's between him and his family, but also all of us, because it was in the news. But I was like, in my head, I'm like, are you not allowed to say, man, that's fucked up to your family? Not that he's bisexual, but like, that's still fucked up that you were like with a male escort doing drugs and you got like two little kids and a wife at home. Like, that's, we can all agree. Like, if, let's put it this way, this is what's so fucked up about it. And this is the kind of shit I like to joke about. If he had been found with a female escort, people have been like, you trash motherfucker, breaking up the black family. Gone, trash. Thank God he didn't win the governorship, because this would have been a scandal and ruined Democrats for years in Florida. And I'm like, but because it was a man, it's like, oh, speak on that truth, Andrew. Share your truth. And I always find that kind of funny. Where it's like, but he still did probably put his family through some shit. Like, I'm guessing that his wife wasn't like, we're in an open relationship where Andrew can go to Pound Town with male escorts and do crystal meth. That is our relationship and only our relationship, and it's none of your business. She probably reacted like Gene Hackman in The Birdcage. A hooker? Male? With crystal meth? So I just wrote, coming to AMs. I was like, he was found with a male escort and crystal meth, coming this fall to AMC, breaking by. And I thought that was a good joke. And so far nobody has policed it. So maybe that gives me a little hope, for the future of my comedy. Unbelievable. Today I found out, like a dummy, that I have to get vision insurance to go get an eye exam. Didn't realize that. Such a stupid person. Like, everything's a la carte, and I didn't get vision insurance because I'm an idiot. I always thought vision insurance was like, oh, when I want to buy glasses or contacts, that'll be covered. And I was like, I'm good. But instead, vision insurance is like, unless somebody shoots you in the eyeball, a routine eye exam has to be covered by vision coverage. And I was like, shit, I don't have vision coverage. No vision. What an analogy for my career. No vision. Couldn't see the future. I don't know why I brought that up, but I was looking to make an eye appointment. You know, I start to get pessimistic and I go, okay, well, while I have this good job with these good benefits, time to get everything. And before like fucking pandemic two hits in the winter, I was like, let me get these eyes checked. Let me get this knee scoped. Let me get this body for a tune up at the, get my annual physical. Let me get, everything done, get everything dental checkup, all that shit. And then I was 0-for-1. I went for vision first, and they were like, you need a vision plan? And I was like, I have a vision board. Does that count? I don't have a vision board. So I don't know what the fuck we're talking about. My 2021 plan is very simple, people. You know, I'm like a doomsday prepper, but the only doomsday I see is my career, and it turns out I'm usually right. But I'm going to do a new album or special, but let's be honest, it'll probably just be an album. Who gives a fuck? It'll be Hot Fire, and I'll do that in 2021. And then I'm going to use my weekends to write a book. That's all. And I'm already getting into that mode, folks. I don't mean to disappoint you, but I'm already getting into that mode that I had to get into a year ago. I remember standing in my apartment crying because I lived in that apartment 11 and a half years in Midtown Manhattan. And it was just such a hub. It was so easy. I was right by the E train. I could get to all the West Coast places, all the places in Queens. I could get to the airport, Penn Station, all the places I traveled out of for 11 and a half years doing stand up. And it was just an empty apartment and the neighborhood I knew and Cookie, my dog, just floating around my apartment. There was a picture I remember posting on whatever, Facebook or Twitter, whatever it was. Twitter, I guess. I was off Facebook. But I said, okay, shed your tears, and then time to get used to your new life. You have a nice new place. You got a nice girlfriend and a good job. So you know, mourn this phase of your career and move on. And I think I need to be at that place again. I need to start. And so my plan going forward, I'm not going to let anybody ruin my plan by giving me good news, is to make an album. I already have the shit ready to go. Just try to line up those gigs, or God forbid a special. If anybody buys, but I'm sure nobody will. I have nobody pitching me. So the shit doesn't come out of thin air. So that's probably not going to happen. It'll just be my 7th self-produced album. Hopefully some people fucking buy it or stream it or fucking tell me they liked it and never listened to a track on it. And then write a book on the weekends. And that's it. Because the first pilot I wrote was funny, I thought. I don't know if it was technically sound. It was the first thing I ever wrote from start to finish as far as screenplays go. And then COVID hit and workplace became 98% different from what I wrote because I was writing based on what workplaces were like in February 2020. So I had a chuckle at that. I was like, of course, my pilot, just to let me know, oh, this shit ain't selling, even if it was the funniest fucking thing ever written. Just letting you know, JL, you failed, because now work is different. So I'm going to write a book, semi-autobiographical. You can't fuck with that, because that's me. My life has already happened. So I know that works. I know it happened, so it will make a believable story. Will it sell? Probably not, but I can write good, and I think it's worth a try. And it'll give me, you know, creative outlet on the weekends. So I'm not saying I'm turning down gigs. I'm saying no gigs are coming my way. I have no manager, no agent, and no gigs. So that's like if, you know, unlike most comedians, no matter how accomplished I am, I face the fucking music. Unlike everybody who does three open mics and then labels themselves their profession stand-up comedy. I'm like, if I have no gigs, no agent, and no manager, it's hard to call myself a stand-up comedian. And that's what I want to do. And I don't know if it's going to happen. So now I'm in that mental phase of, okay, going to the gym. Went to the gym for the second time in 3 days today. I was alone. My building reopened its gym, and I think people are being very cautious. And my thing about that is, if I was in shape, I would avoid the gym, but I'm in terrible shape. And I feel like I need to lose weight and get my cardio up. And I'm trying to eat healthier, as I've chronicled on this podcast, because I don't want to be some fat dude who dies of COVID. And I say that with respect, folks. I don't want to be some dude who's got pre-existing conditions or like a pre-diabetic and all of a sudden catches some shit. And it's a harder journey, 'cause I'm, you know, 6'7", 285 instead of 6'7", 235. So I feel like going to the gym for me 3 to 4 times a week is the discipline I need. And so far so good. I'm the only one in my gym, like my building gym, not the nasty fucking gym in my neighborhood is a pile of shit. It's $26 a month and it ain't even worth that. And it has all the equipment, but it's the kind of gym where it's like, they definitely bought this gym in like 1983 and it was the shit. And then they never replaced so much as a pad on a bench. You know, like you're sitting down on a bench, it's just that yellow foam coming through the black leather, and all the weights have rust, and all the dumbbells are like rattly because nobody ever tightens them. And even in that, what I do love is even in that environment, I remember seeing what looked like a mother-daughter team of Latin whores Instagramming their workouts and doing like squats where their like asshole hits the camera or something. I was laughing. It was like, wow, we are just such a TikTok, Instagram. You don't even mind that your gym is a big pile of shit. You're like, these 900 people need to see this 50-year-old Boricua ass. And that's what I love about my gym. it's called Powerhouse Gym. And I'm like, this is not a powerhouse. This is a fucking outhouse. but I'm not going there. I don't trust that. If you don't put so much as duct tape over your busted benches, you aren't doing ventilation systems and wipe downs. So I trust my building gym, and I love the fact that it's empty. So my plan going forward, you know, I'm 7.5 months from turning 42. So my goal is just to get fit, get healthy, make it through the winter, you know, not get COVID. And, you know, next year, just say, okay, if I'm lucky enough to still have a job, like a real job, not a fantasy job, like stand-up comedian, you know, just start doing that, get back into that mode right on the weekends, you know, stay in shape and hope that, like, there's still a creative avenue for me open. Could this all be different? Of course. But, you know, with 17 years under my belt of no manager, no agent, you know, I feel like odds are in my favor that I'm right. So we'll see. So new album, write a book. That's my 2021. And until 2021, I'm in the weight loss game so that I don't become susceptible. I improve my immunity so I don't fucking croak of COVID. And I don't mean to say that flippantly for all the people we've lost to COVID. It's terrible, and I don't want that to happen to me. Okay, here's something, I guess, an update. I just finished Adam Carolla's new book. It's called I Am Your Emotional Support Animal. Now, I've been on Corolla a couple times this year. The publicist I have, who actually, part of the reason I got a publicist was to try and do like a stealth long shot Grammy campaign for my Trump album. My Trump album, I think, was the number one selling comedy album of May 2020, because it sat at number one on Amazon for a while, and it sat for a while at number one on iTunes also. It wasn't one of those like 6 hour flash in the pans. And I don't say that with disrespect, because that's what I've had in the past. This thing just sat and squatted in number one for like 4.5 days and then stayed in the top 10 for like 2 weeks. So it pushed a lot of units for me. Obviously, people also streamed it. And it was timely. It was really good and really timely. And the main thing I wanted from the publicist, I was like, yeah, I'd like to get, you know, my overall brand boosted. Like, I thought I would be putting turbochargers on my momentum. That was the goal. Like, now that I got momentum, let's fucking supercharge it. But I really wanted to see if I could get this album nominated for a comedy Grammy. And I know that's a long shot, but this year, let's be honest, there isn't as much high-profile comedy content because nobody's been able to make new stuff. Like, I know Netflix will probably just make album versions of their specials and they'll get 4 or 5 of the nominations and that'll be that. But I really thought with the right push, this could happen. Now, the person they put in charge of it was like, let go. So, so she wasn't doing a good job and now she's doesn't have a fucking job. And I don't think it's going to get so much as I haven't gotten one review of the album, not one sort of publicity moment for it. But one of the things that the woman booked me on was Corolla. Now, as I said to them, I was like, you know, I've had an open invitation to do Corolla for years. Like, I did it 8 times with no manager or agent or publicist. And I stopped going on Corolla because I just, as funny as I think I do think he's funny. And he was always like nice to me. And I know that's not an excuse for people. But the fact is, the three people who gave me a bigger platform when my career was not where I wanted it to be, and not like now, I mean not where I want it to be, like not even fucking close. The three people, very simple. Rod and Karen, I guess those are two people, but I count them as one for the purposes of the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. Adam Carolla, who even though he doesn't book the show, he liked a sketch of mine and booked me on the show and then just had me on a lot. And Pete Dominic. Those are the three people who gave me access to their platform because they liked what I did. So it's hard for me to just be like, look, Carolla, man. I don't feel that way. But I do feel like his politics and the way he expresses them and some of his feelings on things that matter to me are... I'm not saying he doesn't have his reasons or his logic on why he feels how he feels, but he's so strident in some of those things that are important. Because this isn't me saying, oh, you can't joke about that. Joke about anything. But when he's serious, he says some things that I kind of fundamentally disagree with to the point of I don't, you know, the reason I stopped trying to get on his show was because... You know, I don't need the Milo Yiannopoulos, Ben Shapiro, not that they're the same. I'm not equating them. I know people would equate them. Milo is much more incendiary than Ben Shapiro. But the alt-right fan base was starting to really perk up with him. And there would always be something. I remember I was promoting Israeli Tortoise, my 2016 album, and I just made a reference to how men, I'd rather be me walking down the street late at night than a 5'2" woman by my, you know, if I had to be by myself. And all these guys, and this was 2016, this was just the tip of this shit happening. Actually, if you're spouting liberal talking points, if you look at the data, men are in much greater danger. And I'm like, okay, so that's what you got out of all that? Like, and I realized that the fan base was changing on me. And ever since then, Corolla has become much more strident against things like Black Lives Matter. Like he doesn't just have opinions about, he's sort of angry about it in a way that is uncomfortable for me. And then when you're defending Tucker Carlson, I think is either a bigot or just a guy who plays one on TV, but doesn't tell his audience that it's a character. So he does the damage either way. And this isn't one of these, oh, free speech, we can't be free. No, be say what you want to say, but it's also my freedom to associate. The brand of show is not in keeping anymore with what, you know, I always thought of Carolla as a guy who was, you know, loved his comedy, still think he's hilarious. That's why I bought the book, because I have fucking, it was the fourth Carolla book I have. I don't agree with every word in it, but I value good comedy. And I still laughed at a bunch of stuff in this new book, but when I didn't laugh, it was as strident as it has ever been with him, you know, on Black Lives Matter. And I, it was, I don't know. It was my decision to say, you know, I feel like it's gone in a direction that I don't like. And then the publicist who was not getting me anything gets me booked. And I was reached out to by the guys on the show. And there's not one person on the show that I have beef with or a problem with personally. But if anybody is a problem for me, the closest would be, you know, Carolla. And I'm saying I don't have a problem with him. But in terms of when he talks about certain issues, it no longer feels like, hey, man. Like Carolla was a guy where I'd say, okay, well, you know what? I disagree with him on taxes and I disagree with him on some racial issues. But I get where he's coming from. And we disagree. He has a foundation to it that I don't agree with. But I can't, you know, it is important to have exchanges and to sometimes listen to people who you don't agree with. In the New Jersey Star Ledger, there's this old curmudgeon-y columnist like Paul Mulshine. That motherfucker like is hard. It seems pretty hard right, or at least just grumpy right. I don't even know if he's hard right, but he's grumpy right, meaning conservative, like right wing. But I actually kind of like reading his stuff just because it's like, hey, this guy's coming from a position of he's got his political foundations and his way he thinks government should work. And I can disagree with it, but I it's still worthwhile sometimes reading because he doesn't get into a lot of, he's often talking about state politics and state policy. So there's something totally worthwhile in reading that, even if I disagree. And with Carolla, I always thought, well, I disagree with him on this and that, but I enjoy him most of the time. And it's always good to hear, at least hear what somebody on that other side thinks from you. But over a couple of years, and the fan base kind of, I think there was a symbiotic relationship between him getting a little more angry at the left and then his a few fans like me sort of leaving and being replaced with people who saw him. Instead of seeing him on The Man Show or Comedy Central, they saw him on Fox News. And it reinforces. And now your fan base, you're getting more tweets and more emails saying, Ace, love the way you went after, bop, bop, bop. And then you can't help it. Even if it's not conscious, it's going to reinforce and shift the way maybe you present sometimes. And it just got too aggressive. But I felt like I didn't want to insult the publicist or the show, which had been good to me. So I did it. And, you know, a friend of mine, Randolph, didn't read me the riot act, but reached out to me and he had known that I had abstained from the show for years. So I think for him, it was, why did you go back on if nothing's changed in terms of the reasons why you stayed away? And I said, well, sometimes you don't want to make things awkward. And it's just a difficult position to be in. And I've said, like, I'm not going to do the show because it's a tricky thing. But I, you know, if I can't stand, you know, comedy's given me very little, but if I can't stand, at least I've conducted myself with some integrity throughout this process. And it's not even personal. It's just like the brand of the show. That's why I turned down a lot of right-wing TV and radio when I first went viral, because I was like, I don't like your brand. And for me, I think Carolla is fucking funny and I'm grateful for what he gave me early on, and that he hasn't, you know, and they want me on the show. They like me on the show. They've all been very nice to me, but it goes too far, and I think some of his audience is, a lot of his audience is like too far for me now. So it's just my luck, right? Like I get an in with a show, but it's, you know, I had that in since 2013 on my own. I made that in happen myself. So I don't know what that was all about, but that's just explaining my relationship with that show. You can hear it in my voice. It's a difficult thing to navigate because I have this pre-existing relationship with the show. And then I saw the show sort of change, and I'm not saying that he became a worse person. I think he became just, you know, he may think of himself as sort of the super independent thinker, but I think we're all human, and the feedback you get online and the exposure you get, and as you get older, certain things harden in terms of your opinions on stuff. And yeah, I just think it's not the right place for me. Who knows? I guess there is no right place for me except the Righteous Brick Podcast here on JL Homeless Records. I don't know. That's about it, guys. This has been a meandering episode. But yeah, it's just, I don't think it's working out, but that's okay. And now I'm not quitting on anything, but I think just psychologically I need to prepare once again for disappointment. And that's what I'm going to be doing the next several months. I'm going to continue to put out work, and I'm going to work on that album. So it's not that I'm not working on things and that I don't have ambition, but mentally I think I need to put myself like my girlfriend said to me, and I agree with her even though I'm not doing it, but she said, I think you need to take a month off from comedy because you can't take a month off from the law firm. So you need to just get rid of comedy. And the sad thing is, if I take a month off from comedy, I may have a lot of followers, but those algorithms will look at me like, oh, we thought you abandoned us, so we're not showing your stuff. And then all of a sudden, all that I earned, all that attention and following I earned will sort of atrophy. And that's scary also, because there is that kernel of me that says, but what if shit pops off when clubs are back open, 2021, we get a vaccine. What if shit pops off? What if you still can turn this into your moment? You don't want to waste that, right? And that's why I'm not taking a month off. But I think if I'm being totally honest, that's exactly what I should do. I should take a fucking month off from this. But the good news is I'm not letting my fans change me. I'm getting angry at my fans, which, if using Carolla as an example, and I could be wrong about him, but I'm saying I heard a change in his tone. And more importantly, maybe I'm not familiar enough with him for his whole career, so I could be wrong on this, but I also feel like the show became a higher percentage serious over once Trump got elected. Like more, it was like, it went from 90-10 humor to anger and rant, like anger and attacking progressives in a serious way, not through jokes, to 50-50, where it was like, okay, well, I could get through the 10 to 20 minutes of stuff that I didn't agree with, you know, different viewpoints and all that. But if like an hour of the 2 hours turns out to be angry rants on issues that are important to me, it becomes much more difficult to be like, it's just entertainment. It's like half the show is Fox News and half the show is comedy. And I don't watch Fox News that much. I don't know. Another tangent. I don't know where I'm going. I should end this episode. So thank you for listening. This was, as always, a weird journey into my mind. Yeah, for humor, check out Making Podcasts Great Again. Check out my stand-up albums. I put out enough funny content. I do nothing but try to be funny. So sometimes these episodes, there have been hilarious episodes and there have been miserable bags of shit and everything in between. So I guess thank you for listening. I don't think I came to any resolutions. I probably cut myself off and forgot half the points I was trying to make. But the point is, I have despair for stand-up comedy. I have deep despair for my career. But I have that 42nd birthday in mind as a time to, you know, a new album, rejuvenated health, and maybe looking forward to other things in my life besides comedy, because, you know, comedy feels like that miserable relationship where there's good and bad, but like everybody around you can see, like, come on, man, she's not the one.
And you're like, oh, you don't know her how I know her. And then you're like, oh, no, they were right.
So we'll see, guys. We'll see what happens. But stay safe out there. Wear your masks. Wash your hands. Don't be an asshole. Vote for Joe Biden. And I will see you next Tuesday.